This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, marking this weekend the 72nd anniversary of that date which has lived in infamy, the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941. I sure had a special time, as always, with the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association folks in Fresno, where I live. Each year the numbers are fewer and fewer, but the message doesn't change. Keep America alert is their motto. Our guest today, Elmer Wright, was there in the waters just outside the harbor on December 7th, but it was off of another Pacific island, Tinian, where he was wounded in July of 1944. He has shared with us how that unfolded, so we know why he wears the Purple Heart. He's also related how he earned the Bronze Star for extinguishing a fire on an ammunition box, saving his own life and the lives of two others. But we need another explanation here, because he said he spent a year and 9 months in the Oak Knoll Naval Hospital recovering from those crippling wounds, and he just casually mentioned that during that span he got married and became a father. There's got to be a story there, so let's see if we can get it. Mr. Wright, how'd you pull that off?
Well, I met my wife when she was about 13. Her parents lived in Oklahoma, and they went back there, and I got to riding to her, and her mother's taking care of her, make sure she didn't go out with other boys, and so she come down, and I heard on the loudspeaker, I thought it was another girlfriend. But I went there, and I told her she didn't want to marry a crippled guy. I was going to send her back, but she wouldn't go back. So we come down to San Joaquin, where my folks live, and they stayed there about a week, and then went back down every week. So finally, we end up getting married.
It must have really meant something to you, or proven something to you, that this pretty girl wanted to marry you when you're all banged up and in a wheelchair in the hospital.
Yeah. Well, she stood behind the chair and we got married. We married down in San Joaquin. And so we was married 63 years, and she died here about 5 years ago at 80 years old. She's awful young. She got married. She's just 16. But she had all this, her mother, they thought I was Lord Jesus Christ. I don't know. But they thought the world of me.
Well, and people say don't get married that young. It must have worked out right for you guys. So you take all this time to recover. You get married. You have your first child. You're still in the hospital all this time. You start working in a wheelchair. What allowed you to do all that? What gave you the hope that you could make something out of this desperate and broken situation?
Well, I know I didn't have a very good job before I went in the service. Well, I went to Creamy. I grew 30 cents an hour there, but I went to that school. I taken body and fender and diesel, auto mechanic, combination welder, all of those. And then I had myself employed out Kerman there. I had five guys working for me. But then I was working about 14 hours a day. The guys all get off 5 o'clock. I keep the service station open until about 10. It's part of the business. But I finally gave that up and sold it to my head mechanic there. And I went to work for the post office. I worked up the mechanic and then made an analyst out of me where I diagnosed the cars. I'd go to work at 6 o'clock in the morning, get off at 3. We'd either go golfing or something after that, or fishing or something. I spent about 20 years as post office. That was my last job.
Well, and now I see you. You're 92, 93 in January. I see you walking around your house here. And you just got to go on our inaugural Central Valley Honor Flight. Clovis Veterans Memorial District sponsored you as one of the veterans within their district, and we were so thrilled to get you there. I know you had a great time, but I'm just thinking about your story. And here, you could have been killed on that ship. You were handicapped, and even those pieces of shrapnel in your spines came oh so close to paralyzing you. How do you make sense of all these things that have happened to you and the fact that you're still here?
I don't know. It's a funny thing, but I don't think I ever got scared. I was thinking about safety more than anything, keep from getting killed. But we take some kind of pills, kind of helped along. They give to them Tawa and another island. It helps you from getting upset or something.
They were using you guys as guinea pigs a little bit, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
Do you feel like God was looking out for you?
Probably, yeah. I know I went to church several times on the ship there after that. I don't know if it helped or not. With the smoker board ship there too, and I was the only Marine on there with the smoker, and the rest of my old sailors, we go different ships and like wrestling and boxing and so on. And I got pretty good at boxing. I was went up, boxed for the champs, South Pacific, and I lost it. I was a boxing guy, and he kept butting at his head, really boogered me up. And the old gunner sergeant, he was my corner there, says, well, next time he comes up, say, I'm not doing anything about it. When he comes up, just back up, lay one in the back of his head. And I did, and they stopped the fight and give the fight to the other guy. And I quit. I dropped out of the smoker.
Hey, tell me about Honor Flight. What did you get out of that experience of going back to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I always wanted to go back there. I got the number off the World War II, that there's 400,000 killed in World War II. In Vietnam, it was 58,052 killed. Now, the Korean veterans, I don't know, they had a deal there, but they had statues out there. Yeah. I didn't get no number on that. I don't know why. Then we watched Change of the Guard. Those guys all look alike, same height. I don't know if they even knew who was there. They looked straight ahead.
Yep.
Face about that, and they'd walk one, instead of marching like we do, instead of the one foot and then the other around in front. It went on 24 hours. They had three-hour shifts.
I bet you liked their uniforms.
Yeah, well, you know, the way they had Army.
When you looked at those gold stars at the World War II Memorial, and you mentioned over 400,000 Americans killed, yeah. Did you feel, did you look at it and say, that could have been me?
Yeah. I said, I was lucky, wasn't me. Then my son, he went with us in Vietnam. There were six guys killed in his company. And there was a guy there with a pen, volunteer. And he knew where he got it. About a half an hour, he got all those names off that board.
Yeah, so your son, a Vietnam veteran, got to go as your guardian, and you both got to experience these monuments to you and, of course, your fellow Marines that you lost.
And I was in a wheelchair. I had a cane, but he told me to get in a wheelchair, and he put me down there, loading up about a quarter mile long. And so we got down there, and the girl said she'd want my son was getting those names. She said she'd push me in the wheelchair. Well, we got down there, she couldn't push it coming back, so I got out of the chair and pushed it.
What was the most meaningful part of all that for you? What did you get out of it?
Well, I was most interested in, I wanted to see Kennedy's grave, but I don't think he's got a tomb on his grave.
Well, they have that eternal flame that burns for him there at Arlington, yeah. And you guys also went to the Marine Corps Memorial with the big statue of the Iwo Jima flag raising.
It was the second group.
I know, that wasn't the first flag. That was the second flag, yeah.
There's one corpsman and four Marines. I didn't know my name, but I don't know him right now. It's about a statue about hides, those higher in this building.
It's huge, and it's not just for those guys. It's for all Marine Corps veterans. So did that have some special significance for you?
Yeah. I don't know. I always praise the Marines and what they've done. I felt it was... Most maybe weren't, I don't know, but I know in San Diego, when they're taking training there, though, they had the Rangers taking training with us there for a while. Mm-hmm. They were pretty good. And the Green Beret come up in Vietnam later on.
When they say once a Marine, always a Marine, what does that mean to you?
Well, I've been trying to keep that. I go to all the meetings.
Why do you do that? Why is that so important?
I don't know. Get involved, it seems like it's part of you. Yeah, I brought the Marine Corps League, I guess, is the best one, but. I belong to the DAV, Disabled Veterans. I'm meeting there once. I belong to the Purple Heart.
Any special story about receiving your Purple Heart and your Bronze Star? Did they make a big presentation out of that, or did you just get it in the mail, or what?
One Purple Heart I got in the mail. It's up there. I didn't think that's when I got hit in the arm. I thought it was maybe friendly fire. They gave me a Purple Heart for it. And the next one I got on Tinian. I was in the bed when they awarded that to me, bedfast.
You mentioned something about the chaplain sending word to your family. What did your family know this whole time, and what did it feel like when you got home and saw him again?
The first sergeant sent a telegram to it, critical. When we got to New Caledonia, thinking about suicide all the time. I didn't want people to see me like I was. I didn't even want to live. And so the chaplain, he sat there almost all night at my bedside. Then after that, they put guards. Made sure every guy taking a pill.
Yeah.
But I was putting mine under the pillow because that's the only way I could feel I could get rid of myself. But a person puts his mind to something so strong you can do it.
Well, and I guess now you're probably pretty thankful for that chaplain, huh?
Yeah, I look back and sit there all night too.
Well, I know I'm running out of time here, but I just want to say thank you for serving our country and for telling us about it. When you think back on on everything that you survived, the life that you've had since then, the children and grandchildren and all the things you've experienced. What are you most thankful for? What are you most proud of?
I think all my kids got good educations. One of them is fed a police officer, and he's retired now. And my older daughter's retired from Internal Revenue 32 years. Now the younger one is still working for AT&T. And disabled veterans, their kids could go to college free.
Yeah, so we talk about guys like you and, of course, those who didn't come home paying the price for our freedom. In your case, your injuries, I know you found a way to overcome them, but they were pretty severe, and they helped pay for your children's education, too. There are so many layers to Mr. Wright's story. I'm sure we have not uncovered all of them. Maybe you'll have a chance to shake his hand, talk to him a little bit, and get some more. But for me, just the reality of how close he came to losing his life back in 1944, the injuries he's dealt with since, the power and the candor with which he shared his story today. I think of that chaplain who helped him find the will to live. How important is the work of our chaplains and every member of our armed forces today as we bring home veterans who are wounded physically, emotionally? Those scars come in all shapes and sizes, so keep them in your prayers this holiday season. I do have some photos of Mr. Wright, including a few from his trip with Central Valley Honor Flight, up on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. We started the show with his memories from December 7th, 1941. And one thing I like to do each year at this time, as long as we have the time, is listen back to the words some of you heard over these very airwaves 72 years ago, one of the most famous presidential addresses ever, and really an inspirational speech that helped focus a nation stunned after what had happened at Pearl Harbor. So before we wrap things up, let's listen to a little bit of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressing the nation on December 8th, 1941.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense, but always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. I believe that I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God.
That's FDR, December 8th, 1941. You've heard it before, but I don't think it ever gets old. And I do think there is value for us today in remembering the way our nation responded all those years ago. If we ever need to respond to something of that magnitude again, I hope we can find a way to do it with the solidarity and the selflessness displayed by our greatest generation. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'll look forward to our next visit. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you once more that freedom is not free.